Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of RumRadio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and RumRadio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on RumRadio.org.
We'll have to do a Skype sometime.
Okay, good.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and RumRadio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe, which has gotten a little smaller. I was going to keep mentioning this for a while because I think it's really, really important and something to consider at depth. The GSO, that's not the KGB, but that's the General Service Organization of Alcoholics Anonymous, to the auspices of the Grapevine, which is our monthly meeting in print, has produced a book. And the book is called One-on-One Sponsorship. The interesting thing about this production, it's the first time in the 79 years of the beginnings of the recovery movement, or the recovery movement with Alcoholics Anonymous, that they have produced such a work, indicating that sponsorship is coming back to the forefront of recovery, and we couldn't be more pleased. We believe here at Rum Radio that one-on-one sponsorship is the essence of the recovery movement as it was and is and shall always be. Amen. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, Alabama, and points south. And they do this as a public service presentation. Thanks, guys. Every little bit helps. We'd also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I had just really recently sent them in a post that we had done. It's called, I had posted it in and taken it off. I had sent it in some places, and it needed not to be presented yet, but it was called The Children of a Lesser Charge, AA Batteries in a Meeting.
Right.
last step, merge your accounts, Grandpa Haven, continue. I'm proud of myself, I remembered my password and everything. Oh, I heard the sound. There you are.
Harold!
Great.
Harold, can you hear me?
Okay, bye.
Anyway, well, I was, I believe I got knocked off. I don't know if you were watching, listening.
Yes.
Anyway,
hey,
so
hey, Joseph, this is Harold.
Oh, okay, you didn't hear. I got knocked off.
I did hear you got knocked off, yeah.
Huh.
Everything
I'm,
went
I'm,
dead
I'm,
for a few seconds. And tell me our guest name again.
Craig McSee.
Craig, all right. Let's see here.
And so Harold does a fine work with troubled families. What we found, too, that is the... as we go to the prisons, and Harold goes to the prisons, we find a lot of folks in the prisons because of drugs and alcohol. The vast majority of the people in prisons are crimes of opportunity fueled by drugs and alcohol. Now, there's some career criminals, but not as many as you would think. Usually what happens, they get in there, they get busted for pot, or they get in, you know, DWI, and of course, now they're felons, and it's hard to get a job, so they get involved in the criminal network because they can't do anything else. And it's just like it's a downward spiral for a lot of those folks. So how you doing tonight, Harold?
I'm doing great, Joseph. I just got Craig. Let me see here. Let me turn this up a bit. I just got Craig on Skype.
Oh,
so,
good.
So say hello, Craig.
Hello.
Oh, it's a little bit skippy, but it might work. It might work. So I'm doing great. Have you introduced me yet, Joseph?
I did. I have.
Oh. All right. Very good. Well, my I just got word today that we're going to be able to go back into Fort Bend County Jail with some lessons on anger management and. You know, that's for now, that's as close to recovery as we can come from, as we can come. And I consider it an honor to be on. And let me mention to our listeners, this is not a money-making proposition, the radio show or the website, rumradio.org. Joseph and I do this as our way of giving back. Joseph hasn't made a penny on the program. He's, in fact, he's sunk thousands into the website and pays out of his pocket for the radio program also. So I consider it an honor to be here. Joseph does also. And I don't have the chat room open this evening, but I think we'll be able to communicate with Craig using Skype and the telephone combined. So, Joseph, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay, well, we're going to give it a try. Some of your listeners might hear that we're having some technical difficulties. And, you know, when it rains, it pours. You ever notice that, you know, if it's just one thing? Matter of fact, this week, my house heater went out. And it went out on the coldest day of the year. And it's Murphy's Law. If something can go wrong, it will go wrong, and to add to that law, it will go wrong at the most inopportune time. But it was good. I got it all fixed out. I have a fireplace and as a backup, so I was lucky in that, and it was only one night so far that was really that cold. I got my unit fixed, and I'm back on. So,
you put on your onesies and just toughed it out, huh?
Well, I have an electric blanket and a fireplace. So it wasn't that rough.
All right.
So I like to start the show with the third step prayer. Now, this might come a little different, but we're going to get into recovery. If Craig is not able to get on tonight, we'll do it another evening. We'll figure something else out. But we'll carry on. We have plenty of information, so I wouldn't be that concerned either way. This is going to go. Some real good information in any event. When I get a sponsee, and that's called a prospect, and I qualify the prospect with certain questions, I ask them, have you had enough? Yes or no? Or are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? That's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. It says, go find a prospect and start working on him. And I'll paraphrase and say something to the effect, if he's not interested in what you have, and don't leave him and go somewhere else and find someone who's desperate enough to want what you have. So it tells the instruction in the big book is for you to go out and get the guy. Go out and get the girl. Reminds me as a disclaimer, this is not AA, CA, or NA. This is more like Paranoids Anonymous. That's where nobody will tell you where to hold the meetings. And if you can hang in the whole hour, you might think it's Narcoleptics Anonymous. No, it should be a good show no matter what happens. So we're not affiliated. There's a program out now. It's a feature film. It's called The Anonymous People. And the way they address themselves is, hi, my name is Joseph, and they use their last name, and I'm a person in long-term recovery. And that works because in our 11th tradition of AA, it says anonymity in press, radio, and film. So as long as you're not connected up with AA or NA or CA, you didn't break that tradition, and that's the idea of that. So I'm glad to see people are, you know, opening up their minds and coming out to the forefront in recovery. It's time. This is a time to turn the clock back to the pioneers, and this is what we're trying to do. They were very productive in their approach, and I believe in the 12 and 12, which is the 12 steps and 12 traditions, on step 5 it says, until we've spoken with complete candor to someone and they've done the same with us, we still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of a true kinship between God and man. So what it's saying is not only do you have to speak a fifth step, which is a form of coming clean of all your past errors to another person, another human being, no wiggle room on that, and then that speaking it and of doing the same for us, listening to it. So who would listen to it? A sponsor would listen to it. Until you've heard a fifth step, you still didn't belong. You were circling the field waiting to run out of spiritual gasoline. And what I'd like to see, if I was king, was that the rite of passage in recovery will become hearing a fifth step and going out to places wherever you can to get that sponsee so you can get your rite of passage by becoming a sponsor and hearing that fifth step and moving that on. And I think that would be a huge push in the recovery field. But that's everybody. If you get 15 alcoholics in a room, you're going to get 20 opinions. Anyway, so I like to start with the third step prayer. It's found on page 63 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And why Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous? Because that's the template of all 12-step programs. This is where it comes from. So using the original material and the original template is the cleanest way of getting the message across. That's what I found. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Thank you. Well, Greg, can you speak up? Let's see if we can make a go out of this.
I certainly can. My name's Greg. I'm an alcoholic. You can hear me all right?
Okay. What do you think, Al?
Are you hearing it okay?
Barely.
Let's try some more. Greg, go ahead.
Yeah, I can hear you guys just fine.
Is that better?
Okay. It's about, it's probably as good as the one I'm going to get. Okay, the way we do this is what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now, and then what keeps you to maximum service to God and your fellows. So tell us, what was it like?
Well, it started off fantastic. I mean, I started getting all that stuff at a very young age, drugs and alcohol, and I moved out on my own at a very young age. I moved out at 17, had a full-time job, was doing school full-time, and every weekend I was drunk. It didn't start off terrible. I thought it was great to begin with, but slowly but surely it got worse and worse and worse over time. Eventually I started getting into a lot of other stuff, like some of the substances out there. And actually, I can still remember, I used to live right across the road from where I worked at one point. So I would get high or get drunk before going to work, and then on my break, go home and rush and do some more, go back to work, same with lunch, same with my second break. And I thought I was doing fine at the time. I was absolutely blind to things falling apart.
When was the first time? When was the first time you drank alcohol or did drugs or, you know, the first time you remember you go, wow, this is it?
Well, I remember, like, getting sips of beer from my dad from, like, very, very young. I want to say 6 or 7, I'd bug him on a regular basis and be like, can I have a sip of that? Can I have another one? And just keep harassing him for it. What's really funny, though, is after a while, I actually became a very evangelical Christian for a while and completely spoke out against alcohol and drugs and thought they were the evils of the world, basically. Which is ironic, considering I ended up going way off the deep end.
But yeah, you know, the devil's brew kind of deal, right? So, I've heard that before. And then there was a switch over. How long were you sober in between? How long were you in the evangelical fervor?
I would have said about a year and a half. Yeah, a year and a half sounds about right for my evangelical Christian phase. And then, well, I got introduced to the whole woman thing again, and a lot of them, well, like to drink. So I started doing that to fit in, and then I found I really enjoyed it. And it became pretty much a nightly thing, but I still didn't realize it was an issue because I had a very well-paying job.
Now, how did you reconcile? Did you bother to reconcile the previous evangelical fervor, or you just kind of dismissed it as a phase, like comic books or puberty?
I call it more of a phase because it wasn't so much about, being evangelical Christian is having this whole holier-than-thou attitude. Like, I'm a servant of God. Look at me. Nowadays, I take a much more relaxed approach to things of that nature. I don't really push my beliefs or my opinions, but I'm more than willing to discuss them to anyone who asks.
I think
that's
probably the
best way. Are you still there?
Weird sound. Yeah, I'm here. I just heard a weird sound. I thought maybe you had dropped off. Okay, so you're 6 years old. You became evangelical. What about what age?
I think that was probably around 12. That sounds about right, yeah. And then,
so that
went
to like from 12 to 14?
Around 12 to like 13 and a half.
Okay.
And then around when I turned 14, life actually started getting really interesting for me because my father got diagnosed with terminal cancer, and that was in my first year of high school. It wasn't the quick acting kind either. It was 6 months of suffering kind of cancer. And I think that played a bit of a role in it, too.
How so?
It's kind of hard to continue being evangelical and holier than thou in your beliefs when you lose a parent figure at that young of an age and you see them go through 6 months of deteriorating. Like, it wasn't clean. It was a messy situation, unfortunately. But I did manage to get through it. And then after that, eventually I got into place around 17. As I was mentioning earlier, a few years after that, the company I was working for, they closed down the local site that I was working from and said, hey, you know what? If you move to Kingston, we'll pay for your entire move and let you keep your title, which I thought was great, so I went there. And that's where things started to get interesting and a little bit out of control in my life. That's when I really started to, I was drunk or high pretty much all the time when I was out there. Eventually it came to the point where I lost my job, not due to substance-related issues, but just situations regarding cost of hiring people in Canada versus hiring people in overseas.
How old were you at this point? Early 20s?
Go ahead.
You're early 20s now. So did you get through college?
No, I actually never went through college or university. I managed to get into my career purely through experience and self-education, which is very rare nowadays, especially in my field. I just completely walked out in getting one of the starting jobs I did get. And I'd say it was about 3 years ago that happened, so around 23, maybe 22. But I had enough money saved up that I didn't feel the need to work anymore. I had a couple of job offers, and I said, no thanks, I'd rather get high and drunk all the time and do absolutely nothing. And for a while, it was great until I started running out of money. I moved back to my home city. And I still didn't want to get a job, but I still had no income. Things were pretty rough in my life. And at that point, the place I was living, I made one of the most brilliant decisions of my life, which was to get into a relationship with someone else who was into hard drugs and lived in the same place as, or house as me, and had just broken up with someone else who was in the same house as me. Doesn't that sound like a winner of a situation? And then somehow, I managed to make it last 2 years. I thought it was great because I was high all the time, but then looking back at it now, it was terrible. Probably the worst thing I could have done for myself, and actually, it's that relationship that eventually took me down far enough to bring me to the point to seek recovery. So when I first started seeking recovery, it wasn't earnestly. I was in a very bad situation. I wanted to get out of it. And I figured if I claimed I was a drug addict, that I could get help and get out of the situation. Little did I know, I actually was, and I was just deluding myself. I'm very good at that. Long history of denial.
Yeah, I know. My first sponsor told me, Joseph, if I need somebody who wants to rationalize, minimize, or justify, I'll give you a call.
Yeah, I am a pro. after the end of that relationship, it eventually got to a point that I can't even believe I let it get that bad. So, of all things, I took my mother around 3 a.m. in the morning, and basically said to her, hi, Mom, I'm a drug addict. I need you to send me somewhere that I can get help.
Party yet. Why do you want to be with all these old folks? You're going to miss all that time.
Tell me, do you think the biggest problem was the pain pills? Is that what stretched out your early recovery and withdrawal so long?
Well, it was worse than pain pills. The stuff I was specifically doing is a lot of people call it patch. The more common name you'll hear about is fentanyl.
Oh my.
It has a very high death rate. And to give you an example of how strong this stuff is, they give these patches to people who are like terminal cancer patients who are in incredible amounts of pain, and a lot of these patches last them 3 days. Whereas me, now I'd be smoking a whole one to myself in a few hours and then moving on to the next one.
So you put the patch on, or you...
No, you cut it up, put it on tin foil, and smoke it through a straw.
Oh, my
God. Yeah, I had never heard of this stuff before, actually. I met this lady I got into a relationship with. She introduced me to it. Not to blame her. I would have probably done it eventually anyways. I've done pretty much everything else out there, at least once. But that stuff, because it's such a strong handler, actually will remove your ability to deal with normal amounts of pain. So when I got off of it, I wasn't allowed to take ibuprofen, aspirin, Tylenol, or extra pain I had because of lengthened the chronic pain withdrawal that I was experiencing from it, just because it would be covering it up rather than letting my body heal.
Yes, that is interesting. Really interesting. I've had a client who was on fentanyl. It didn't go well. Well, I appreciate you sharing that. I bet people are learning a lot. So go ahead. What happened after that?
Well, I got into the detox center. They took me to the meetings. I decided I didn't like AA right off the bat without even really giving it a chance. I decided I liked NA. There was no real read of my
separation in beliefs other than I thought I might have a problem with drugs, but alcohol, there's no way that could be a problem, which a bit later on in the story you'll find out definitely is. Going through there, another thing they did for me is they also set me up to go to a rehab center. The one I went to specifically is called Westover. It's a step-based rehab center where they focus on the 12-step method and actually focus on getting you through the first five steps, because the fifth step, at least what they said to me at the time, is where a lot of people tend to fall off of the 12-step recovery program, because it's hard for people to bring themselves to do. I personally didn't have that hard of a time with it, but I was really, really crazy. Another interesting thing about it, too, is just before going to detox and going to rehab, both times I just looked at my mother and said, you know what, I really don't think I need to do this. I think I can pull through. I am so glad she saw right through me and dragged me out there. I have to say, I absolutely love my parents. I mean, they've done a lot for me and been there for me through this whole time, and I've put them through a lot of stuff. I really appreciate them. They picked me up drunk in the middle of the night. They've taken me to detox, rehab. They supported me. They were at my one-year celebration, which was fantastic. But back to the story a little bit, I guess. So after getting out of detox, 2 days later, someone I met at that detox, who also lived in Sarnia, was a friend of mine, decided to get a hold of me and ask me if I wanted to go drinking with him. So I said sure, thinking that would be a great idea. I was going to rehab for drugs, not alcohol. That drinking night led me about 100 miles away from home, driving in a car. Well, buddy was driving, I was in it. We were both driving. Started to think maybe there's something wrong with this situation. So for the rest of the week, I didn't drink, and I basically hid in the basement until it came time to go to rehab, which I brought over and didn't want to go, but I got dragged there anyways, which was fantastic because it was probably one of the most wonderful experiences of my life. I was expecting some horrible place, but they had all kinds of great food. They served like 6 meals a day trying to get all of us to put some weight back on. They had a lot of classes and teaching on different things about addiction, alcoholism, the effects of it, a lot of introduction to the 12-step method of recovery, which has been basically my pillar of recovery the majority of the time. After being there for the 19-day program, in the last week when they actually had us do our step fives, I was a little nervous about it, but they said to me, the person that you do your step five with, there's someone who's been in AA for a significant amount of time, they've heard them before, they've done them, and you'll probably never see them again. As fate would have it, that didn't stand true for me, which I'm really thankful for. After this step with the guy, I found out he lived in the same city as me. So, right then and there, I said, well, I've already told you everything, so I guess you're going to be my sponsor. Which he agreed to do as long as I called him when I got back to Sarnia. Fantastic guy, he's still my sponsor. He pulled some great stunts on me, like, he has a sailboat, he loves to go out sailing, and one thing he did is, he invited me out to go sailing, which I did, waited till we were out in the middle of the lake, and then, said, so, how are you coming along with your step work? There was no way I was swimming to shore. He had me. That's the kind of sponsor I needed at that moment. I managed to stay sober for about 5 months at that point in time. Then I couldn't even tell you why, but I started drinking again. where they don't find out, which I was really good at. Eventually, there came a night where my parents apparently picked me up. I don't really remember the details. What I do remember is waking up to a Facebook message that said something along the lines of, "Hey, what happened? I cleaned up all the vomit you left in my bathroom. I don't know how or if you got home, and I still have your shoes and pants, so call me as possible." And I didn't even really get a chance to reply, because I woke up, checked that, and then there's my mom and stepdad, and they're going, "Hey, Greg, guess what? You're going back to detox." So back I went to the Center of Hope, actually, the same one I was at before, and I was all nervous about going there, thinking, you know, they think me as a failure or something like that. But no, they were all happy to see me. They smiled. They didn't really know how I was going, because they knew the answer to that. But they were just generally very friendly and accepting, which is something I really wasn't used to. And that's when I started to think, what's going on with these people? I never really questioned it for the time before, because they were all crazies, but at this point, I kind of started to figure that something was going on that I couldn't quite understand. Unfortunately, that little stunt that I had pulled where apparently I called my parents at 3 a.m. and they came and picked me up, and that's how I actually got home. I don't really remember. That's the story I've been told. It was either go back there to some really, really strict rules, which they had every right to do, and they weren't unreasonable, or figure out something else. So I ended up staying in the homeless shelter for about a month. You'd think that living in a homeless shelter would be this terrible, terrible thing, but I have to say, it was actually kind of fun in a really, really weird way. There were people around who were just as crazy as me. I didn't have any responsibilities. They cooked me 3 meals a day. I got to play chess most of the day, which I absolutely loved to do. The one thing it did, though, is it kind of taught me something funny, because I used to, for the majority of my life, be the very high and mighty type, the whole I'm better than everyone else attitude, which was very much bred into me. But living in a homeless shelter really, really beat that out of me pretty quickly. But if it weren't for that, I don't think I'd be at the point that I'm at today. So I really have to be thankful for that. I mean, it was a homeless shelter run by the Salvation Army. The detox I went to was also run by them. They're a fantastic organization, and they're ones that I really have to give my thanks to as well, because they really have done so much for me in my getting back to a semi-normal life. While I was still living in the homeless shelter, I'd go to the library once a day to jump on the internet for an hour, talk to people I knew. A friend of mine actually got a hold of me while I was there through Facebook and said something along the lines of, "What are you doing in a homeless shelter? Seriously, I have a spare room. I can help get you hooked up on welfare in our city so that you can survive while you're trying to get yourself back to normal." And you can move in right away. So a couple of days after that, I ended up moving back to Sonia, which was kind of difficult because there were still a lot of people in the city that I knew that I shouldn't hang out with but wanted to. So keeping myself separated from all of that, that was quite the challenge for me for a long time. Most of the time I just hid in basements or in my room and played video games, and was in probably 2 meetings a day at that point in time, just because it got me out of the house and talking to people that weren't trying to get me into drugs or get me drinking or any of that stuff. I did that for a while, and I also started to get much more heavily involved with AA. I also attended NA and CA for reason, I found I related better with old people at AA who I originally thought were telling depressing stories and had nothing to do. And I eventually found out they have more of a life than I ever had. I mean, some of them do some fantastic things. So I got involved with one of the bigger groups in my city, called the Eastland Group, and they just kept volunteering me to do things to teach me responsibility. Like, at first it was, my sponsor was setting up the meeting, so he said, hey, you're going to come and help out. And then the month after that, it was my turn to set up the meeting for the entire month. And then the person was supposed to do it after that, for some reason couldn't, so they just told me to keep holding on to the keys, and I set up for the third month in a row. Then they told me I was going to become a group secretary, which they didn't have a choice in, but they also knew that given a choice, I usually make the wrong one, so they kind of pushed me towards it. And slowly but surely, they've been teaching me responsibility and how to make good decisions. There are some times when I still don't make the best ones, but I have managed to stay sober for a year. It only took me a year and a half. I've also been volunteering as much as I can with a lot of local charities and organizations, because one thing that I find really important is the immense step of the 12-step coming back and not necessarily undoing the harm, but saying, I recognize I did some things I really shouldn't have. What can I do to make things right? And one thing I always remembered is, through a lot of that time, I was a very big drain on society, at least in my eyes. I mean, I really wasn't contributing other than towards the drug and alcohol problem in the city. I was leeching off of welfare. And it didn't really make me feel good, but it's something I had to do at the time. So I do a lot of things now to try and give back to the community. It's kind of my amends to society, as it were. Like,
so living amends to society is great.
Well, I figure it's very important. Like, we have a couple things coming up in my city, for example, called Spirit of Christmas and the Spirit of New Year's. What it is basically a 24-hour event for people who don't know what's going on Christmas or New Year's. So they asked me if I'd volunteer for that, and they gave me the time frame. So it was one that was ridiculously early, like 4 to 5 in the morning. And I said, you know what, I'm a night owl, and it's hard, so why not? I can spare some time for that. A little lack of sleep isn't going to kill me. I stay up till long hours and I play video games anyways. At least this way I'm doing something good with my time. Just basically, any time that I get a chance to put myself out there or help someone, I'm all for it. I call members of my home group once a week just to see how they're doing, say hi. I think that's really the main highlight without getting into all the nitty-gritty details, but I'm pretty sure anyone who's ever drank understands.
Tell us a little
bit
more
about... Do you do any
sponsorship? Tell us a little bit more about how the fourth and fifth steps went for you.
Well, the fourth step was really funny because I thought, you know, this really isn't going to be very big for me to write about. I'm a pretty good person. Then I started writing, and 23 double-sided pages later, I was looking at it going, maybe there's some problems here. Maybe I haven't been quite the moral character I've been seeing myself as. I really didn't care about the fourth step, though. I mean, they told us to put it in our drawers and keep it locked away and hidden so no one else read it, and I do just, like, forget about it and just leave it on the table in the middle of the place where anyone could read it if they really wanted to. I was pretty scrambled. And then when they told us that we were going to be doing our fifth steps, I figured, well, I don't really want to tell anyone this stuff. Forget the fact that I was laying it around for anyone to read who wanted to, because I didn't care about that. Just the act of telling someone something totally different. Then they set up the date, told me I was doing my such and such date at such and such time. This is still where I was in rehab at Westover. And so I met the guy I was supposed to be doing it with, and he was this short little guy, like two-thirds tall. I'm 6'5". I'm fairly tall. And he, I don't know, he just didn't strike me as the kind of person I'd have ever expected to be, involved with the kinds of things he was involved in, like volunteering at the rehab center to come in and do that once a week. So I sat down and started telling them stuff, thinking that stuff was so terrible and so horrible, and no one's ever done anything like this before. And then, you know, every once in a while he'd pipe up and go, "Oh yeah, I remember doing that stuff too," which really shocked me, because again, I think of myself as this big, tough, drug-doing, alcohol-drinking, criminal-type person, and there's this little two-thirds-by-size guy saying, "Oh yeah, well, that's normal." That blew me away. Again, the only reason I really agreed to do it is because I didn't think I'd ever see the person again, but lo and behold, they had another idea for me, and he became my sponsor, and honestly, I couldn't have asked for a better sponsor. Things worked out in my life when I decided to start getting better.
That's amazing. I call that a God shot.
Actually, one term that I heard that I really liked, and there's a book on it, was called God Things. It's basically the idea that there are so many coincidences in our lives that guide our lives in certain directions if we let it, that it can't be just coincidence. Like, there's too many things that happen in such a specific order, especially looking back at my getting back into recovery, looking at the way things just perfectly line themselves up, my parents being there, forcing me into the detox, even though I asked for it and then decided I didn't want to go, ending up in the situation where I had to spend a month in the homeless shelter, which really was a turning point in my recovery, getting my sponsor, who I never thought I'd see again, but just everything happened to line up perfectly. And then actually not too long ago, I just got to celebrate my first 1 year in recovery. I got my medallion. It was absolutely fantastic. I was just on the 9th that just passed. I managed to stir up a bit of controversy on it because I decided to have it on the same day as some major AA event that was also going on in the city, and people were upset about that, but I had to do that to keep it smaller because I figured it was more about my family than anything, because they were the ones who really wanted to do it. In fact, I didn't want to celebrate at all. I, like, no, don't want to be in the spotlight, don't want the attention. But thankfully, I had a very good sponsor and a few very good friends in AA who convinced me, no, no, you need to do it. This isn't about you. It's about your family, your friends, all the people who've been there with you, and showing that the program works.
Yes, the other new people in the meeting really are blown away by some of the birthday meetings and people who take a token. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was an absolutely wonderful experience, and honestly, I'm very honored to be invited onto this show and have the chance to share my experience, strength, and hope. I very much appreciate it, and it's just a huge honor for me. I've never actually been on major or any kind of radio before, so this is a first, and it's just kind of funny how even this lined up. It's one of those coincidences that just perfectly happened.
Do you sponsor anybody now, Greg?
No, I do not. My home group actually tends to have some fairly strict rules about a lot of things. Like, for example, one thing they do is you are not allowed to chair a meeting at my home group until you've had a year sober. But they also do a lot of great things that make it really inviting. Like, one thing we do that I had never seen before and I thought was fantastic is everyone knows there's coffee at AA meetings. My group takes it to another level, and they get someone to get up like twice during the meeting to go fill up a jug of coffee and walk around and refill everyone's coffees. There's creamer and sugar on all the tables, and I haven't seen that anywhere before.
So if I've never worked the steps, but I have a year that I've been able to stay sober, that's sufficient.
I'm for sure, yeah.
Yeah, as long as I've been going and not drinking for a year, even though I didn't work the steps, I can still chair a meeting there.
Yeah, that's the view of them. They tend to tell me the story and reasoning behind it. I really can't remember. I wasn't interested in listening, and it was one of our group conscious meetings where I was just writing things down and trying to ignore all the side conversation because there's so much to write down.
Well, my experience is it says that
a year. I think some of it has to do with the idea of just having been around long enough to be able to see how a meeting is chaired and things are like that.
It comes from the pamphlet where it says they suggest a year of sobriety before you sponsor, and so it's come into our language, and it says. So a lot of folks figure out, well, you know, if it's going to be a year, then I could take a year to work the steps. You know, I'm not supposed to have any type of romantic relationship. I'm not supposed to sell my house, buy a car, change jobs, do any major changes in my life because who I am now will not be who I am a year from now. That's where that comes from.
One thing I'm a big fan of is something called the Back to Basics program, where they really try to push you through the steps in a short period of time. I believe like 2 weeks is about the average, and from what I've seen, doing it in that way has a much better success rate. That's just my personal experience. I don't know the numbers or the stats or anything by it, but getting statistics or numbers on anything from a 12-step program is very difficult to start with because it is anonymous. But that's also a lot of my experiences. I was pushed through the steps at a very quick pace, and the first time I really didn't take it seriously. But the second time around, when I took it a lot more seriously and put a lot more of myself into it, I got a lot more out of it. Like, I didn't dilly-dally on steps and take, like, a month of step. I got myself pushed right through it and said, okay, am I done this one? Have I done it to the best of my ability? Yep. Okay, let's move on to the next one and get all this stuff done. In fact, funny enough, when I started getting to the point where I was starting to make amends, there were some people telling me, oh, no, no, you shouldn't do that until you've had a year. I said, yeah, really, that's great. I'm going to do it anyways and see what happens. Some of it worked out. Some of it, but I didn't take it hard. I just did the best with what I had, and for the most part, it's worked out very, very well for me.
Yeah, at Rum Radio, that's really what we're pushed more so than anything is back to basic. That phrase has gotten a bad rap because of the fellow Houston who did it, badmouthed AA, and that was not the way to present that information. It's the correct information, but his presentation left something to be desired. So he left a lot of criticism in the wake. What we try to do, like on the website, we have taking someone through all 12 steps in 24 hours. And you don't just using the big book. You don't have to do it in 24 hours, but that information is there. I've never done it in 24. I usually go the Joe McHugh 28 days to 45 days. I usually that's the way I could do it. But my experience and the longer I've been in the program is indicating that the sooner the better. You know, the more timely what we've been doing is thorough has been robbing timely.
And I absolutely agree with that. I mean, you can do something to the point where you haven't missed a single letter, but to someone like me who was at serious risk of relapse or going back out drinking or whatever term you want to use for it, if I hadn't been pushed through them so quickly, I wouldn't have had much of a reason to, well, hold up and not drink. I mean, it taught me to be accountable and responsible for my actions. It got me motivated, so I was actually doing things. And it just quicker than any other way I've seen. It taught me a new way of living life, which has brought a lot more happiness to my life than any other way I've lived before.
That's a great point.
My experience is when I take my sponsees through quickly, right? Now, it's not a guarantee that they're never going to pick up again just because we've gotten through. But I like to put it to you this way. The newcomer is life's blood to AA, just like the old-timer is the backbone. But relapse is the soul because there's nothing as tormented as a head full of AA and a belly full of booze. So what I've accomplished was if I've got him through the steps, I've ruined his drinking career. Even though he might drink again, he will never drink and drug with impunity.
Like the first 5 months there, I didn't get through all of them. I stopped just around 6 and 7. I was picked at infinite 7. I just didn't want to move on. But even just getting me that far got me to the point that when I was drinking, the
well, that's great. So how long are you sober now? What do you got? You said you had a year and a half. It took you a year and a half?
Yeah, I have a year sober and it only took me a year
and a half. Well, congratulations. You know, I would suggest you take a pretty strong look at the website. One of the posts we have in there under the captain's table is called THIQ and the Disease Concept of Alcoholism. Which basically it states that there's a physiological component from drinking alcohol that stays in your brain for 5 to 7 years.
You're breaking up, Joseph. What Joseph is talking about is THIQ. I don't know if you've heard of that, but
I have heard of it, actually. They taught me about it in rehab. And then I did a lot of my own research on it. It's nice that they're trying to meld science with 12-step recovery and all of that stuff, but from what I've read, a lot of the science behind THIQ doesn't really hold up. I don't really think it matters what causes it, me to be an alcoholic, why I'm an alcoholic, what led to it. All that really matters to me is how to stop being one.
Yeah, I feel I feel like we're survivors off the Titanic. We found a lifeboat. It's called the 12 Steps of AA. And I've attended NA and CA also. But, yeah, I feel like we found a lifeboat. That's the main thing. Recovery. My worst day in recovery is better than my best day drunk.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That's great. Yeah, we need to close it up. So thank you so much, Greg. That was very inspiring.
Absolutely. And it's a great honor to have you inviting me on to the show and for me to be here. I very much appreciate it. And you too, Nathan.
Thanks. Good job.
Good job. Thank you. Any last words, Harold?
Well, I just want to encourage everybody to, if you're interested in recovery, work the steps, find someone to work them with, please let other people through, and keep in mind that as you work the steps, eventually we encourage you to lead someone newer in recovery through the steps, and that's when your program really takes off. Thanks, Joseph.
You're welcome, Harold. And in closing, we'd like to say we're in Rum Radio and rumradio.org. We had 2,400 listens last week on the archive on Rum Radio, so our audience is building. And of course, we have Nashville.
A little bit, but we appreciate you for listening. Greg.
Absolutely, anytime.
Sounds like we lost Joseph. But go to the website, rumradio.org. Are you back, Joseph?
Yeah. You're just talking.
Good.
I just. Yeah, okay. Well, in closing, Rum Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and between 300,000 and 400,000. It's to the website. So it's making a difference, folks. So if you need some sponsorship information, remember, tune in to Rum Radio and rumradio.org. And remember, we'll see you on the radio. Good night.
All right. Good night, everybody.